I'd like to welcome all of you here, especially those of you who are visiting. That's kind of me, although it's hard for me to think of myself as a visitor here. Me and Terry have been going here for so long, married in this building. I was baptized in this building. So it's hard for me to think of myself as a visitor. And I'd like to thank very much the opportunity I've been given again this morning to bring a lesson to you. It's been several months since I've had that opportunity, but I very much enjoy it, and I would like to encourage all the men out there who have not had this opportunity to take it, because I believe there's no better way to learn the gospel, to get closer to God's will, than prepare to bring that lesson to other people. If you open your Bibles to John, the 12th chapter, that'll be the beginning text of my lesson this morning. Specifically, verses 27 through 33. And this morning, we're going to talk about what brings you to the cross. Specifically, what brought people to the cross that day that Jesus was crucified, and how we can make application of that for ourselves today. John 12th chapter here, we begin reading in verse 27. Now my soul is troubled. What shall I say, Father? Save me from this hour. But for this purpose, I come to this hour. Father, glorify your name. And then a voice came from heaven saying, I have glorified it and will glorify it again. Therefore, all the people who stood by heard it, said, and it sounded as thunder. And others said, an angel has spoken to him. Jesus answered and said, this voice did not come because of me, but for your sake. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. Christ said he would be lifted up from the earth, and that if he was lifted up from the earth, he would draw all men to him. There's power in a lifted up Christ. Drawing power in a lifted up Christ. You know, death has always had its fascination for us as humans. A death scene, or any scene that involves some type of death or humiliation or shameful type scene, has a certain drawing power to us as humans. Look at some of the shows that are on TV today that are very popular. America's Funniest Home Videos, which shows people in somewhat shameful scenes, somewhat funny scenes, is very popular. Others, such as the police shows, Cops, Highway Patrol, all showing the cameraman as they follow the police around on their rounds. A highway accident draws us in. How many of you passed by a highway accident and slowed down to kind of see what had happened? And can any of us forget, or very few of us will ever forget, that night several years ago, 2 years ago this summer actually? I don't know if there's anyone else in this building who missed it, but if you did, you're one of the few. A white Bronco being chased by police down an LA freeway. I remember we were together with a church group. We were at some type of fellowship on a Friday evening. We were playing games, having some food, and suddenly all of us, maybe 20, 30, were drawn to the TV that night, watching that white Bronco. In death, there is both horror and fascination, both repulsion and attraction. We don't want to think about death, but we do. We don't want to look at it. We don't want to see it, but yet we become riveted to the scene. You know, there was a while back when Phil Donahue wanted to broadcast live an execution. Why do you think he wanted to do that? Because that scene would draw such a high rating. Death is both horror and fascinating to us. I remember my first experience with death, the time that death itself seemed to come to rest in my consciousness as a permanent fixture, was when I was young and I had to watch or follow a current event in the newspapers and the news. And the event that suddenly caught my attention was the mass suicide down in Guyana with the Jim Jones cult. Many of you may remember that. And in those days, that was before CNN, the live broadcast, the up-to-minute news. But every day for several weeks there were pictures in the paper, pictures of a compound with bodies strewn all over it. That's my first experience that I remember death really laying into me. You know, these events like that are no longer unusual. It used to be that we could say, watch the first 15 minutes of the 6 o'clock news, and you could get all the blood and death that happened in the town that day. But outfits like CNN have changed that. You see, the news is always on today. We can always turn on the news and watch the first 15 minutes of blood and guts. Death holds both horror and fascination for us. I have a prediction. If the government would allow it, if they would mount the cameras on the guns of the tanks and in the helmets of the soldiers as they go into battle, and they broadcast that as the battle was ongoing, we would be riveted to the screen. We watched most of the Gulf War almost live on television. Death is fascinating, yet horrifying to us. Well, it was Jerusalem, 30 AD, a major city in the Roman world then, a major cultural center. Three men died outside the gates of the city that day. It was a place called Golgotha, that is to say, place of the skull. Either because it had become a place of execution in that day, or because it was the shape of the hill which had two recessions that looked like eyes. And on that day in 30 AD, what drew people to the cross that day? What brought them to that hill? And today, we're about to take a memorial supper in remembrance of Jesus and his sacrifice for us. What draws us today to this memorial cross? What draws you to the cross? That is to say, what draws you to Jesus? Let's look first at what drew people to the cross that day. Well, we've been talking about the first one of those things. What drew people to the cross that day was what we've just said. That is death. Death drew people to the cross that day. Death has its appeal. John chapter 19. Verses 17 through 20 said, "And he, bearing his cross, went out to a place, the place of the skull, which is in Hebrew called Golgotha, where they crucified him and two others with him, one on one side, one on either side, and Jesus in the center. Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. And then many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin." Pilate wanted everybody to see this inscription, and many were there to read it. Many from many different countries, because the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city. And the scene of that crucifixion drew people to that place. Death has its appeal. And this was Pilate's way of getting back, I think. The Bible doesn't tell us, but it was his way of getting back at the Jews for putting him in a position where he did not want to be. For it's possible that he thought Jesus was an innocent man. But many read the inscription because it was near the city. You know, Jesus was popular at this time. John chapter 12, back there in verse 9 through 19, we read, "Now a great many of the Jews knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might also see Lazarus, whom he had raised up from the dead. But the chief priests plotted to put Lazarus to death also, because on account of him many Jews went away and believed Jesus. And the next day a great multitude that had come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches and palm trees and went out to meet him and cried out, 'Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel.' And then Jesus, when he had found a young donkey, sat on it, for it is written, 'Fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt.' And his disciples did not understand these things at first, but when Jesus was glorified, they remembered that these things were written about him, and that they had done these things to him. Therefore the people who were with him, and when he called Lazarus out of the tomb and raised him up from the dead, bore witness. For this reason the people also met him, because they heard that he had done this sign. The Pharisees therefore said among themselves, 'You see, you are accomplishing nothing. Look, the world has gone after him.'" They've gone after Jesus. Jesus was very popular. If put to a vote that day, 30 AD, among all the people in the city, what would they have voted? Put Jesus to death or let him live? Only several days before his crucifixion, Jesus was treated as a king. They called him king as he rode in the city. He must have been popular, for it wouldn't have been necessary, if he wasn't popular, to have a traitor. For the Pharisees to come find him in the middle of the night to have a 2 a.m. trial, it wouldn't have been necessary to take him in secret and bear false witness against him. Make no mistake about it. The arrest, trial, and crucifixion of Jesus was brought about by evil men who wanted to kill an innocent man. Let's take a moment and go back in time. Let's put on our reporter's hat, go live to the scene, and ask some people at the crucifixion, "What brings you to the cross?" "Mr. Jew, you've come out to the gates of the city today to see this man killed. What brings you here?" "Well, I've heard about this Jesus. I've heard he done some great things. I just came to see who he was, and I came to see him die." You know, we've forgotten something. It wasn't too long ago, maybe 100 years, maybe even less, that public execution was a form of public entertainment, even in this country. If the punishment for today's crimes were death on the town square, do you think it would draw a crowd? I'll bet it would. It would draw a big crowd. And it may help us in our current situation with crime. But Golgotha was close to the city, and they came to see Jesus die. Death has its appeal. What brought others to the cross? There were many people there that day. Another thing brought some to the cross. A thing called duty. Duty brought some to the cross that day. Duty demanded that they be there. Mark chapter 15. Verses 16 through 25, we read, "Then the soldiers led him away unto a place called the Praetorium, and they called together the whole garrison, and they clothed him in purple, and a twisted crown of thorns was put on his head. And they began to salute him, 'Hail, King of the Jews!' And they struck him on the head with a reed, and spat on him, and bowing to the knee, worshipped him. And when they had mocked him, they took the purple off, put on his old clothes, and led him out to crucify him. And they compelled a certain man, Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, as he was coming out of the country and passing by, to bear his cross. And they brought him to the place Golgotha, which is translated place of the skull. And they gave him wine mingled with myrrh to drink, but he would not take it. And when they crucified him, they divided his garments, casting lots for them to determine what every man should take. And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. The Roman soldier was noted for his devotion to duty. They were very dedicated, highly trained, trained in this case to be cruel, trained to be hardened to the suffering of others. You know, when it comes to soldiers and their training, not much has changed from then to now. Soldiers are still trained to be dedicated to duty, to be hardened to the suffering of others. I spent 2.5 years on a nuclear submarine as an officer in the United States Navy. And there was many nights that the alarm went off while some of us were asleep. And for a brief instant there, you don't really know, is it a drill or is it real? Are we being called to our battle stations for the real thing? And there wasn't any officer on that submarine, and I'm convinced there's no officer on any submarine in the Navy today, that when duty calls, when duty demands it, they're going to launch their weapons knowing that millions of people are going to be killed. Duty for a soldier demands that you be hardened to the suffering of others. When asked, "Mr. Roman soldier, why have you come to the cross today? Why are you here at the foot of the cross?" "Gee, man, I'm just doing my job. This is what I get paid for. This is what my officers told me to do. It's my duty. Duty demands that I be here." What brought others to the cross? The Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, the scribes, all those who had plotted against Jesus, came for one thing. They came for judgment. And they came for victory. Judgment and victory. Matthew 27 tells us about them at the foot of the cross and what brought them there. Beginning with verse 37 in Matthew chapter 27, we read, "And they put over his head the accusation written against him, 'This is Jesus, the King of the Jews.' And then the robbers who were crucified with him, one on the right and the other on the left. And those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, 'You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down off that cross.' Likewise, the chief priests also, mocking him with the scribes and elders, saying, 'He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he is the King of Israel, let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him.' He trusted God. 'Let him deliver him now if he will, for he said, I am the Son of God.' And even the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him in the same manner." In football, we call this piling on. Even the robbers piled on. Now we know in Luke later, one may have changed his mind. But they piled on. They were there for judgment over Jesus and victory. Mr. Pharisee, Mr. Chief Priest, Scribe, Elder, why are you all here today? Why are you at the foot of the cross? We're here to see Jesus get what he deserves. This is a victory for us. Now we will have more power over the people, for he is gone. There's one final group that was at the cross that day. And they were there out of love and out of sorrow. And sympathy. Luke chapter 23, verses 27, tells us about them. "And a great multitude of the people followed him, and the women also mourned him, and lamented him. But Jesus turned to them and said, Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for your children, for yourselves and for your children. For indeed the days are coming in which they will say, Blessed are the barren, the wombs that never bore, the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in a green wood, what will be done in the dry? The women followed Jesus. Others who had been close to him followed him. They were there for love and sorrow and sympathy. And note that it mentions that the women were there lamenting him. They were there sorrowful. John chapter 19, verse 25 through 27 tells us that John alone was close at hand. Of all the 12 that followed him, John alone was there close. When asked, Mary, women who followed Jesus, John, the mother of Jesus, why have you come to the cross this day? Why are you here at the foot of the cross? We're here to mourn him and show respect. We're here to support one another and show our love for Christ. For this is a tragedy for us, the fact that he is being crucified. Even the mother of Jesus was at the scene. And mothers, imagine yourselves being at the scene of the execution of your son, if you can. That's what drew people to the cross that day. Death has its appeal. Others were there for duty, the soldiers. Others were there to gloat. And some were there to give sorrow. What brings you to the cross today? What brings you to be at the foot of Jesus on the cross? Is it one of these things? I think it has to be. It has to be one of these things that brings you to the cross. Think this morning what that is. Why have you come here this morning to partake in this memorial supper in remembrance of Jesus and his sacrifice? Does death draw you to the cross? Death is horrific and fascinating for us. Never forget that. And maybe you've felt that as someone has come and described the manner of death which Jesus was put to death. The cross. Crucifixion. Remember, the cross was a way to kill a man, all right, but ever so slowly. The cross was a way to torture a man to death. Ultimately, people would die of strangulation as their body physically lost the ability to exhale carbon dioxide from the lungs. This is why breaking the legs is so important. If you broke a man's legs on the cross, he couldn't push himself up to get a breath. That's how they killed him quickly or ensured that they were dead. And death has its appeal. To know that Christ went through that suffering for us as a sacrifice has its appeal. It has its appeal to many. The scripture emphasizes the physical pain and death that Jesus went through. In Philippians chapter 2, in verse 8, it says, And being found in appearance as a man, he being Jesus, humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Jesus didn't just die in his sleep. He didn't die because he was hit on the head with a blunt instrument or a spear through the heart. Jesus died for us, even death on a cross. But is the physical pain, the anguish, the suffering that the cross represents, is that the power that draws us to the cross? Does death have its appeal for us as Christians? If it does, if the fact that Jesus suffered on that cross, if that's what brings you to the cross, let me remind you, two others died that day, the same death that Jesus. There's no indication that their death, their suffering, their anguish on the cross was any less than Jesus's. and many others have died horrible deaths. Is that the appeal of the cross? You know, crucifixion was a way for the Romans to exercise power over conquered peoples. There weren't just three men in the Roman era that were put to death on a cross. There were hundreds, maybe thousands, maybe millions, I don't know. But there certainly was more than three. If we need to understand the full measure of the pain and suffering that Christ went through on the cross, for us to find the message of the cross, for us to find salvation, for that to bring us to the foot of the cross, you know, the people who wrote the scriptures, the inspired scriptures, don't cooperate. Because in most cases, they just say, they crucified him. They crucified him. Only John goes into any detail at all about the suffering on the cross. And he does that because he's going to prove that Jesus died for us in order to prove that he lives again. There's suffering. There's something more to the cross than pain and suffering. I want you to think about this. What is that? It's a cross. On your way home today, I want you to notice where you see one. Look around. You'll start to notice there's a lot of them out there. As a matter of fact, I think there's a hospital just down the way here in Dayton. I know there's one in Columbus. We drive past it all the time. Big illuminated cross on the side of the building. Why is it there? You know, I had a best friend in high school who wore a gold cross on a chain. Very pretty cross, very pretty chain. Wore it till the day he passed away, I believe. But what is it about the cross that we see it everywhere? On the side of a hospital, people wear it as jewelry, on rings, on bumper stickers. You know, in the Middle Ages, the sword fighters had swords specially made so that they would look like a cross when you turned it upside down. Why is it that we see a cross everywhere we look? Have we forgotten today that the cross was the way to torture a man to death? It was a method of execution. I don't see too many people these days wearing a little syringe or in a little electric chair around their neck on a gold chain. There's no little electric chair or syringe on the side of that hospital all illuminated at night. Those are methods of execution as well, just like the cross. What has happened to the cross? So that now, when we look at a cross, it represents something more than just execution. Why is it that when we look at a cross, we feel good? Why is today's cross a symbol of peace and faith and hope and love and not death? It represents all the best virtues of our world in a cross when you look. Who changed that? What event changed that? That's the power of the cross today. Jesus and his sacrifice. His death on the cross changed the symbol of what the cross is. Are you beginning to see the power that Jesus had? The sacrifice that he made for us. You know, the cross goes way beyond physical death, pain, because of what Jesus became on the cross, because of what he did. Hebrews, the 13th chapter. Tells us, beginning in verse 11, "For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned outside the camp. Therefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach." Let's go to the foot of the cross, remembering what Jesus did on the cross, remembering what he became on the cross, the blood that covers our sins. Why are we here this morning? Why have you come symbolically here to the foot of the cross? If I were to announce and made an announcement, say last week, put it in the papers, on the news, whatever, that I was going to come this morning and deliver a lesson about the cross and to symbolize what Jesus went through on the cross, I was going to allow somebody from the audience to come up here and nail my hands through a cross. Would we have a crowd? Maybe. We might have them packed out the doors. And we'd probably have reporters and the National Enquirer and others in here. Everybody would want to come and see this scene. Now, I could probably survive the nails through the hands. That's not the worst part about the cross. Question is, once we get all these people in here, what are we going to do? And what are we going to do next Sunday to bring them in? And the next Sunday? And the next Sunday? How are we going to keep them coming back? Well, we could go out and get us a grand choir. And maybe some musical instruments. And somebody here might know something about lighting, and we could put a light rack, and we could have a laser show, and we could put a cross up here, and the apostles, and we could just put on a great show. What are we going to do the next week? And the next Sunday? And the next Sunday? What does it take to bring us to the foot of the cross? Constant, elevated spectacle? The death, the appeal of death, the fascination with death. Is that what it takes to bring us to the cross? Appealing to the physical is not what it takes for us to be at the foot of the cross. That shouldn't be why we're here. Don't let your physical circumstances affect the way that you worship God. We talked in the class this morning about money. There isn't any more physical than money. There isn't anything more physical than money. Do you let your physical circumstances affect the way you worship God? Why have you come to the foot of the cross this morning? What brings you to the cross? If not the appeal of death, the suffering, the fact that Jesus went through, is it duty? Does duty bring you to the cross this morning? Now, this is where it's most dangerous for me. Because I've grown up in the church. I've never known anything but the Church of Christ on Sundays and Wednesdays. Is it duty that brings me here? Is it the mindless repetition? Why have you come to church this morning? Well, I'm a member of the church. I'm here every Sunday. I come and take the Lord's Supper every Sunday. Whoop-de-doo. If that's as far as it goes, what's the difference between you and that Roman soldier? He just marched right on out there. You know, those soldiers were probably part of the crucifixion detail. They had done that often. They were there for duty. Got another crucifixion to do today. Who's this guy? Don't even know his name. Don't care. Let's just get him up on the cross and get this over with. Is that why you're here this morning? Let's come on in, let's say a little prayer, let's listen to a little bit of Bible teaching, let's take our grape juice and our bread, and let's go home. There's a game coming on. We've got better things to do than be here. Is that your thinking? You know, repetition has a way of becoming very mindless and dulling the senses. We must pursue the cross and why we're here. Every time we're here, we need to realize the significance of what we do and the importance of our worship and our study. You know, one of the better reasons that we can be here today is for judgment. The Pharisees were there to execute judgment over the man who they called their enemy. But they're a real good example of someone who won the battle. But lost the war. Because Jesus took his death and turned it into victory for us. We can come this morning to this memorial, this symbolic foot of the cross, for judgment and victory. Because through Jesus, we have judgment and victory over sin. The power of Christ can be seen in what he did for us on the cross. Hebrews chapter 2, beginning with verse 14, says, "Insomuch then as the children have partaken of the flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and release those who through the fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage." Because of what Jesus did on the cross, we can be free from the fear of death. Are you afraid to die? If you're afraid to die, Satan still has power over you. Because we can be free from death. Because we as Christians know that the only thing on the other side of death for us as faithful Christians who have obeyed his will is Jesus and eternal life. There's nothing else on the other side. If we haven't obeyed his will, we better not be afraid of death. We better be afraid of what's on the other side, death. Because Jesus died, we can now live forever. If you're not afraid to die, there's still some power that Satan has over you. If you'd rather die than submit to his will instead of Jesus's, then what he did is of no consequence. Listen to Jesus on the cross. "Father, forgive them. Father, forgive them. Even as they nailed the nails into his hands." Can you do that? Can you have that attitude this morning? "Father, forgive them, even as people sin against you." The other thing that can bring you to the cross is love. Love for Jesus, sorrow for what he did, but always remembering that sorrow can be turned to joy. You know, the way we memorialize Christ is through a supper. A feast is what it's called. It's something to be happy about. It's something that can be turned into joy. This is not a funeral we're about to take this morning. This is a feast. Sorrow can be turned to joy. Thank God that no grave held him. Jesus rose from the grave. And we can leave here this morning rejoicing because of what he did and because of the fact that we follow him. Not like those who ran from the cross that day when the sun blacked out and the earth quaked. They ran from the cross in fear. But when we leave this morning from this symbolic foot of the cross, we can leave rejoicing. Before I close this morning, I want to mention two stories. First, some of you may remember a while back, a director or producer for public TV by the name of Ken Burns put together a very lengthy documentary of the Civil War. And this documentary was made of mostly pictures. There were no moving pictures, or very few of them at that time. Mostly still pictures in which the camera would pan around and back and forth in a still picture. And the sound was very important in this documentary. And he tells a story later in an interview that I saw of them laying the soundtrack for the death of Lincoln. And there's a painting of Lincoln being shot by John Wilkes Booth, if you believe that. There's some controversy about that, but... And as they were laying the soundtrack for this, he said, there's a point where there's a shot. The shot that kills Lincoln. And as they watched the rewind, the review of this tape, the producer and all the directors, they heard this shot as the camera zoomed in on Lincoln. And he said they all seemed to think at one time, all the same thought, let's not kill him. Let's not kill Abraham Lincoln in this documentary. Let's let him live. Let's let the ideals, the principle, the fact that he was a great leader, live on. Let's not kill him. Let's think the same thing about Christ. Let's not kill Christ. Let's let him live. How would you vote if you were in Jerusalem that day? Did you let him live or let him die? How would you vote? If he dies, we live, and we have the hope of heaven. If he lives, we die, and we have no hope of salvation. What do you say this morning? We let him live, or we let him die? I say in shame, let him die. I don't want to go to hell. But there's more ways than one that we can kill him. By not remembering his sacrifice. By not acting on the opportunity that he has given us. We make his sacrifice as of nothing and kill him again. So in the same breath, let's say, let him die, but let's let him live as well. There's another story. It's an old Chinese type proverb. Very similar to that which we read in the Bible about the prodigal son. About a son of a wealthy king who decides he doesn't want to live at home anymore. He takes his inheritance, goes off into a far land. And the father, missing his son, sends messenger after messenger after messenger. Year after year after year. And each message is the same. Come home. Come home. And the answer is always the same. I will not. I will not. I will not come home. And finally, after years and years and years, the messenger comes back. And the message is a little different from the father's son. It's not, I will not come home. It's, I cannot. I cannot. I have come too far. And the king immediately sends a messenger on his way with a new message. To his son, if you cannot come home, then come as far as you can, and I will meet you there. That same invitation is open for you this morning. Jesus has begged us to come back to him. If you cannot come to him, then come as far as you can. And Jesus will meet you there. And wherever that is, that place is the foot of the cross. Come to the foot of the cross, and Jesus will meet you there. This invitation is open for all of you this morning. Come up here symbolically to the foot of the cross. There are those here this morning who could show you the way to salvation. If there's any way that we can help you, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing.